My guest at this time is Grace Marie Turner. She is president of the Galen Institute, one of the most respected healthcare policy organizations in the country. It's a big day in the healthcare debate, so of course Grace Marie is with us. Today is the day that the Senate unveiled its version of a healthcare reform bill. It's already gotten a lot of reaction. In fact, there were protests in the halls outside of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's office at the very moment the language was unveiled. So plenty of passion here on both sides. We'll get into the details in just a moment. Grace Marie, always good to have you with us. Thanks for your time today.
So great, Greg. You know, that sort of tells me that they were against it before they even knew what was in it.
It does give that impression, certainly, doesn't it?
That's right.
Grace Marie, you were with us just a couple of weeks ago, and you were talking about how really this needed to get done by September, and certainly the plan of Senate Republicans right now is to get it done before the August recess, if there even is an August recess. In that same interview, you said that the Senate bill needed to do four things. It needed to provide a safety net. It needed to provide a bridge to new coverage. It needed to provide state flexibility on regulations. And it needed to effectively address Medicaid reform. From what you've seen from this bill, how does it do on those four fronts?
Absolutely. In fact, I'm just writing a piece for Forbes. It says that this bill does all four of those key things. Yes, the Senate moves the dials in slightly different ways, and they learned actually from the reaction to the sent to the House bill, particularly the way that the refundable tax credits were structured for people who needed help in purchasing coverage. They didn't go that route, and I think they will find that they don't have as much criticism, that younger people and people that are in particularly lower income categories and people who are just pre-Medicare ages will get more help than they would have through the House bill. So they learned from some of the things in the House bill how to tweak it, but basically they're quite similar because they have to do the same thing, the same four things you outlined. They have to rescue people from the inevitable collapse of Obamacare. If they don't do it, they are now the governing party. They will be held responsible for millions of people losing their coverage. So they have to get this done. And I think that's one of the reasons that Leader McConnell has focus so much on this issue. Get this done. Get this out of here. We've got to do this so we can move on with the rest of our agenda.
One of your colleagues in the healthcare policy department, who I'm sure you know well, is Ovik Roy, and he has tweeted out a couple of things very briefly but didn't elaborate on them. So I'll ask you to elaborate on them. He says the Senate bill is actually a smarter approach when it comes to tax credits and Medicaid reform. How different are they, and do you agree that they're smarter?
One of the things that many of the Republican governors have criticized is that they're worried about losing their Medicaid money, right? Well, it doesn't matter if you're a Republican or a Democrat. If you think your funds are going to be cut from the federal government, then you're going to try to push against that. So one of the things the Senate does, it gets back to a more normal way of spending the federal state match for Medicaid spending, but it does it over a longer period of time. So the states have more time to adjust to reductions in their Medicaid payments, but they also are going to have a lot more flexibility through this bill than they would have otherwise had. Obamacare just basically added millions more people to a faltering Medicaid program instead of building in reforms. This builds in the reforms that we always needed and gives governors more control over how to make sure that they're adequately protecting their most needy citizens. And they also, basically, they have adopted much of the structure of the tax credits in the Affordable Care Act simply because they are income adjusted and they provide some additional help for people in particularly lower income categories. And I think Ovik is saying that that's a better approach than the more flat credit, age-adjusted credits that the House had put in its bill. But there's still the same principle it holds. What they're doing is providing help for people who don't make enough to get job-based health insurance or don't have the offer of job-based health insurance, and they make too much to qualify for Medicaid or other poverty programs. So you've got to help the people in the middle, and that's what this does. It does it through a different system of tax credits. But, you know, I think it really almost takes a tax policy expert to really to see a lot of the difference, but I think politically it will help.
Four of the more conservative members of the GOP conference say right now, Grace Marie, that they are not ready to vote for this bill. It's Ted Cruz of Texas, Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, Mike Lee of Utah, and Rand Paul of Kentucky. The statement is pretty short. It says, quote, currently, for a variety of reasons, we are not ready to vote for this bill, but we are open to negotiation and obtaining more information before it is brought to the floor. There are provisions in this draft that represent an improvement to our current healthcare system, but it does not appear this draft, as written, will accomplish the most important promise that we made to Americans, to repeal Obamacare and lower their healthcare costs. So they're concerned that premiums will still be going up here, and that was obviously a major concern that caused some revisions to the House bill as well. So what's your response to their concerns?
Clearly, I mean, this was not absolute, and I think that the leadership knows that they are going to have to make tweaks and adjustments to this bill. Unfortunately, we're sort of now out of the policy realm, and we're in the vote-buying realm. You know, what do you need, Senator Paul? What do you need, Senator Johnson, et cetera, to be able to vote for this bill? And we saw on the House side that it actually made it better when people really started to push back strongly. I think they are right that we've got to do more to get costs down and to give people more choices, but they're also so constrained by this process that they have to go through, this reconciliation process, to be able to pass this with 51 votes means that everything in the bill has to directly pertain to federal spending and federal taxation, which means that it's very hard to get through to the regulatory structures through this bill, which is why I think that we need to think about this as really the first step, breaking the logjam so that we can begin a process of making changes that affect this one-sixth of our economy so that we can begin to move forward to give people the choices that they want. But we can't do it on the Obamacare platform. We've got to have a new platform. It would give HHS more authority to write regulations, to give states more authority. There's more money in here. There's more flexibility with Medicaid. This is a start, but we've got to get this going so that we can begin to move on not only with other health reform, but with the rest of the agenda to begin the process of doing tax reform, which people desperately need.
We're talking with Grace Marie Turner, president of the Galen Institute. And Grace Marie, I haven't heard it so much from lawmakers, but in response to some of the things that had been reported about what might or might not be in the Senate bill leading up to today's reveal, is that there's still this big government involvement in healthcare, even though it's improving things in a number of ways by getting rid of the mandates, a lot of the taxes, and shifting responsibility to the states and so forth. When we talk about a bridge to new coverage and so forth, is there a point where we're going to see the government, especially at the federal level, take a greatly smaller role in government, and it just happens over a longer period of time than some conservatives would like? Or is there going to be, as a result of Obamacare and all these different programs that have been around for a long time, always going to be a major federal footprint here?
You know, as long as you've got Medicare and Medicaid with hundreds of billions of dollars every year spent on these programs, there's always going to be a federal footprint. The question is whether or not that it's Bigfoot and it crushes the health sector, or whether or not it has an appropriate footprint of helping people who are in need while allowing the private market to work. And I do believe that if you begin to devolve power and money from the federal government down to the states and ultimately to individuals, that the market will begin to respond in appropriate ways to individuals who want more choices of more affordable care, and it will force the political system, especially at the state level, to provide them with more of those options. So devolving money and power down the chain rather than up the chain is what's crucially important, and that's what this bill does, both through Medicare, through Medicaid, giving more power to the states, and by giving the states more authority over regulating their health insurance markets so that they can begin the process of healing those markets that were so devastated by Obamacare.
And lastly, Grace Marie, the Democrats, we mentioned them at the outset, but they're saying that this would be deadly to people. They're calling it cruel, and they're calling it mean, and that we're apparently going to see some stalling tactics, even if the Republicans can marshal the 50 votes needed to at least get to a Pence tiebreaker, if not an outright majority. What do you make of what we're seeing from the Democrats?
Well, I think it's really predictable, but I just have to ask them, are they really defending Obamacare that has caused health insurance costs to double since the year before this law was passed for an individual, 140% higher for families, that you have many counties that are at risk of having no options for people to use their credit. Obamacare has not worked, and it's really hard for me, and there have been no changes that in any meaningful way other than one regulation through the Trump administration or this Congress to precipitate this. This is failing of its own right. And it seems to me that they would want to save as much as possible of the goals of what this law was supposed to do, providing people more access to coverage and more affordable policies that President Obama promised, rather than simply stonewalling and really having them then own the further collapse of Obamacare. We've got to fix this. This is a rescue effort, and they've got to get this done so that they can not only move on with other things on the president's agenda, but to move on with other health policy initiatives that can begin the process of moving us back toward a system where doctors and patients and families are in charge of their medical decisions rather than government bureaucrats.
Grace Marie, we'll call time there. As always, thanks so much for your time and your insights.
Thank you, Greg.
Grace Marie Turner is president of the Galen Institute, one of the leading healthcare policy organizations in the nation. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.